And we have found our guest, Martine Rothblatt, Virtually Human, The Promise and the Peril of Digital Immortality. We're going to get right into that. You know, Tesla and SpaceX CEO Elon Musk said that he was worried that people didn't understand just how fast artificial intelligence was progressing. And he expressed his concern that in a worst case scenario, a super intelligent machine might decide to destroy human life. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Martine Rothblatt, PhD, is a lawyer, entrepreneur, medical ethicist. In 1990, she founded and served as chairman and CEO of Sirius Satellite Radio, now Sirius XM, of which we're on also, Channel 102. And when her daughter was diagnosed with a very rare disease, Martine left Sirius to search for that cure. She founded United Therapeutics back in 96 and has since served as chairperson and CEO, a leading advocate for human rights. We found you, Martine. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, George. Glad to be with you.
You're in Tahiti, I hear.
That's true.
What's it like out there right now?
Warm, 72 degrees, moonlight, dappling off the lagoon.
I love it. I love it. Hey, tell me about the Sirius. How did you develop that? This is so cool.
Yeah, well, back in the 90s, there was nothing like satellite radio. There was nothing like pay radio. There was just over-the-air radio. And I had previously started a satellite navigation company. I knew that satellite dishes were becoming small enough to fit on top of cars. I designed a satellite that would be powerful enough to punch through 100 channels to a tiny flat satellite dish, half the size of a playing card. And I persuaded the FCC to rip away some frequencies from other uses that were not as so unique. They finally agreed. I beat down the National Association of Broadcasters to withdraw their objections that we would be overwhelming them. I said, no, we're just going to grow the pie larger. And in fact, that's what it's happened. There's never been more AM and FM radio stations. And on top of that, there are 30 million Sirius subscribers.
Oh, yeah. It's phenomenal. We're on 575 plus, even closer to 600, depending on whether you include Canada, terrestrial radio stations. But we're on Channel 102 on Sirius XM. And, you know, a lot of people who are in areas where they just can't get us on terrestrial radio, or they're picking us up on that, and they're loving it.
Absolutely. Canadians love it. You mentioned Canada. And if you're way in the far north in Canada, what kind of choice are you going to have for radio unless you have SiriusXM?
It's amazing what's happening to technology, which leads us into your work, Virtually Human. It's going so fast. You know, I just had that story of Elon Musk, where everything he touches turns to gold. He's really concerned that this virtual knowledge is going to backfire on us. Are you?
I'm not, George. I've got a lot of respect for Elon, brilliant guy, but this is the so-called mankind's last invention argument that will invent artificial intelligence and it will wipe out all mankind. I think it's a very typical and interesting Hollywood plot, but in the real world, it's about as unrealistic as thinking that looking for the Higgs boson was going to result in an explosion that would shatter the Earth.
It's going to create a wormhole and suck the whole planet in, or something like that.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
How fast, though, is this moving ahead, Martine? It's pretty rapid.
Well, you know, it's moving ahead fast. Ray Kurzweil, Elon Musk, a lot of people all point out that Moore's Law has not slowed down, that information technology is doubling in capacity every, 1 to 2 years. But the challenges, George, are also humongous. Like when you're talking about creating human consciousness, you're talking about something way, way more challenging than a smart car or a self-driving car or a GPS landing system for an airplane. You're talking about the most amazing thing in the entire universe. So I think we're going to need a lot of exponential growth in technology to come anywhere vaguely close to artificial consciousness.
Is it dangerous, though, to dabble in this kind of technology to that point?
Well, I think if we here in the U.S. in particular create a safe harbor allowing people to dabble, which is the premise of my book, Virtually Human, that we should do that, then we'll be able to stay ahead of bad players and bad guys who are trying to develop some AI that could be harmful. But in general, there's no market demand for buying software that's going to wipe out your bank account and give your passwords out to everybody else and take over the country. So I don't think from a Darwinian sense it's really likely that artificial intelligence will be our last invention. That's not to say, though, that there won't be, you know, terrorists, cyber terrorists trying to do this sort of thing or other countries trying to do it. We ourselves started a U.S. cyber command to defend against this sort of stuff. And we've got to create in the U.S. a robust safe harbor for encouraging people to develop artificial intelligence.
Back when the internet was just really starting to roll, Martin, did you ever imagine it would be where it is today with things like social network, Facebook, all those things?
I had no notion of something called Facebook, for example, but I'm an avid consumer of science fiction, and pretty much the entire world we have today has been laid out in one flavor or another by Robert Heinlein and Arthur C. Clarke and Asimov. So I was like, you know, the first person with a GPS satellite receiver. I was driving my family around on vacations in the 80s. I was the first person with a Motorola Dynatac cell phone. And, you know, I was the first person with an Apple. I'm just that kind of a person. So, yeah, I saw it coming. What makes what I did not expect, George, was for more than half the world's population to get it in less than 10 years. That's what's blown everybody away. It didn't blow me away that America had the internet. What blows me away is that there are more Chinese internet users than Americans.
I know, and it just continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, one of my campaigns here, Martin, in the United States is we need to insulate the power grid against an EMP attack or an X-flare from the sun, because if that happens, if we had, for example, in the 1800s, the Carentine event, and that wiped out the telegraph system with a massive X flare, if that happens today, we're shut down as a society because everything we do is based on electronics.
I absolutely agree with you. And I mean, you know, step one is, you know, Americans got to get off this thing of having like 2 days worth of food and water stored around the house. We do buy these, you know, year-long and multi-year-long dried food packs, and, mm-hmm. you know, we have independent power. We keep water stored. The people who think that there's not going to be a disaster are just deluding themselves. It's the more complicated we build our society, it's like building a house of cards, the easier it is for one card to knock the whole thing down.
You're continuing to invent and to come up with creative things. Tell me a little bit about your work with United Therapeutics.
So United Therapeutics, as you mentioned, was a company I started because our youngest daughter, Genesis, was diagnosed with a fatal illness called pulmonary arterial hypertension. This causes the blood vessels between the heart and the lung just to clamp down and not let blood flow through to the lungs to be oxygenated. And she was told that that you know she should just not walk up any stairs, be driven to school. It was very, very sad. And so I first thought that surely there must be some medicines. The doctors over at Children's National Medical Center, Washington, D.C., said none. There weren't any. So I did what an entrepreneur does. I just, you know, went to the library. I read everything I could read. I found out that there was a potential medicine that was at a big pharmaceutical company called GlaxoWelcome. I flew down there. They said, no, we're not going to develop this. There's only 3,000 people with your daughter's disease. We're very sorry, but it doesn't justify a multi-million-dollar clinical development. I persuaded them to sell it to me. I formed United Therapeutics. I developed it. Today, Genesis is 30 years old, and she works at our company. Today, there are not 3,000 people alive with this disease, but 30,000 people alive, because all those people would otherwise be dead. And today, United Therapeutics is over $1 billion in revenue from this product.
Good for you.
And our whole country.
And the people you've saved.
Yeah. So now the next step, you ask about what's next. What's next is that as I got into this, I learned that the lung transplant situation and the heart transplant situation was never, ever going to meet the needs for organs. Right now, there are 2,000 lung transplants a year, which, by the way, if you have this disease or if you have pulmonary fibrosis or cystic fibrosis, the only absolute cure is a lung transplant. So there are only 2,000 lung transplants a year, but, George, 400,000 people each year die of end-stage lung disease. Now, this is despite the fact that a third of Americans have signed an organ donor card, which is a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, even if 100% of Americans signed an organ donor card, you're never going to get from 2,000 lungs to 400,000. So I figured out that I could solve this problem by genetically modifying the pig genome. I use the pig because its organs are the closest match to human organs of any of the animals in the animal kingdom. So by modifying the pig genome, we can create hearts, lungs, kidneys that can be transplanted into humans, not rejected, and are available in unlimited quantities.
And
we eat 100 million pigs a year, so the 400,000 are plenty for organ transplantation.
We'd be manufacturing body parts like crazy, wouldn't we?
Exactly. And, you know, why not? We keep Boeing, we keep B-52 bombers flying with the grandsons of the pilots who were flying them when they first came out. Just by swapping out the parts, we got buildings and houses that are hundreds of years old because we keep replacing the parts. I am confident that within the next 10 to 20 years, we'll keep people going a lot longer by replacing their parts.
When you were a kid, were you into this, the sciences and things like that?
I was. Like I mentioned, I devoured Heinlein, his juveniles written in the 50s, and his more adult books. I devoured Clark, Asimov. I could not get enough of science. Science is my religion.
The subtitle of your book, Virtually Human, is The Promise and the Peril of Digital Immortality. What's the peril portion, Martin?
So the peril portion is that as people begin to live longer and longer, there are some risks that begin to appear in society. One risk is that perhaps there will be fewer opportunities for younger generations because the never-dying older generations will just squat on all of the good opportunities. That's a peril that people bring up. Another peril that arises is that once we begin living to 100, 120, 130 years old, will people then get bored with life and just we will have accomplished all of this technology just to have mass suicides going on? So those are another peril is a demographic peril. What happens when the large proportion of the electorate are people who are over 100 years old? Will society become inherently more risk-averse and conservative?
Well, that's a good point. Do you see the day where one day someone, let's say, will have his memory downloaded to a chip, and then they'll clone his body, get a brand-new younger body, and then download that memory into his brain?
Yeah, I think that's almost certainty, George, sometime during this century that we're living in right now. The ability to download the brain has been documented as a consequence of Moore's Law by Ray Kurzweil in his book, The Singularity is Near, where he shows the rate of growth in information processing technology and in advanced MRI type of technology for scanning single neurons. But all that stuff comes together to match a human brain around the middle of this century. In the meantime, what I'm doing today with growing body parts, lungs and kidneys and whatnot, Other people are regenerating skin. That's actually an FDA-approved product, regenerated skin. We already now know that we can take stem cells and differentiate them into particular types of cells, muscle cells, neurons, and whatnot. So it doesn't take, you know, a real soothsayer to see that these trends will come along, and you'll have a regenerated body before the end of this century. You'll have the equivalence of a brain and a thumb drive that then can be surgically interfaced with the neurons in the regenerated brain, and you've got an immortal being.
Forever. You just keep doing it over and over again.
Yep, and I personally think that not everybody is going to like this, but I personally think that more and more people will like it, and that the three perils I mentioned are going to kind of evaporate, that people will find more and more exciting things to do. Even today, you know, we've got some very aged celebrities, people who just passed, like Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
I don't think there was any less room for young female comedians, because there was an 80-year-old female comedian who both paved the way and didn't stop performing. I think the pie just grows. In terms of the electorate, in my book, Virtually Human, I go through a lot of demographic research that shows that older people are not inherently risk-averse and conservative. And instead, what happens is voting patterns kind of cycle through the ages with, you know, shifting left to right, right to left. But just because people are older does not mean that they're inherently more conservative. And in fact, older people and these, what I call in my book, Virtually Human, mind clones, the immortalized forms of ourselves, they have the same interests. What do they both want? They want national security. They don't want to be overrun by nihilists. Secondly, they want the best possible health care. The older you get or the more regenerated your body is, the more health care you want. And they want more and better bandwidth so everybody can stay entertained.
You're kind of unusual in that, you know, you're someone who's very successful at what you do, yet you care about people. How did that happen?
Well, I'm not going to claim exceptionality at that. For example, I really think you mentioned earlier Elon Musk. He cares about people a great deal, and his cars are saving tons and tons of carbon dioxide and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of great people around. I feel actually, George, that I'm pretty much the product of Los Angeles City Public Schools, great parents, and a country that welcomed innovation and risk taking.
Well, and you've done both. You've taken the risk and you've had the innovation. What's left on your plate? What will you come up with next?
I'm really focusing like 99% of my energy right now on creating this unlimited supply of transplantable organs.
Yeah.
We recently announced a partnership with Craig Venter, the guy who decoded the human genome.
Yeah.
I was at
a
board meeting with him in La Jolla just a couple days ago at his synthetic genomics company. And those guys are super, super smart. They're the guys who created the first synthetic cell. So they have identified these really cool things called landing pads on the pig genome, where you can insert the humanized genes and they just take to it like putting paper on some glue. And so between our work now collaborating with Craig Venter, we've got great transplantation scientists that we're working with. Robin Pearson is head of lung transplantation at the University of Maryland. And we've got other great collaborators, such as this amazing guy, David Hall at MassGen. All of these brilliant scientists, many of them in their 30s and 40s at the peak of their careers, are all signed on to the goal of creating an unlimited supply of transplantable organs.
I think that's amazing. Martine, stay with us. We're going to take this break. Then we're going to come back with some phone calls and our final segment with you on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, of course, we're going to have those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. When we come back in a moment with Dr. Martine Rothblatt, Virtually Human on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Martine. So with these growing of body parts, I mean, is there any end to what they can do?
I think that the answer to that, George, is No. You are going to see people with, the advances made by synthetic genomics, being able to turn DNA into a Lego-like toolkit that we can build what we want. You're going to see people making better hearts. Ray Kurzweil has spoken in his book about nanobots cutting into our bloodstreams that can allow people to hold their breath for 15, 20 minutes because oxygen would be stored in these nanobots. It's biology is going to transform the 21st century the way electronics transformed the 20th century.
What will this do to Social Security? People will be living forever.
Yeah, we will be living forever. One good thing is that a lot of things will get cheaper and cheaper. So, for example, like bandwidth will be virtually free. You talked about old Western Union telegrams. I mean, they cost a fortune. They were only for rich people. Now we have, we send more bandwidth than the entire original telegram network probably every second for virtually nothing. Entertainment, including, 3D entertainment, games, virtual reality, all this will become virtually free. We already have, you get a smartphone that has on it all the world's knowledge. Anybody ask you a question, you could just sit there and tap out an answer.
It's right there.
So it's all right there. So I think that, Social Security, even if it stayed fixed at its current level, will be able to buy more and more and more stuff.
We have more firepower in smartphones than I think the astronauts had when they went to the moon in 1969. We virtually
Absolutely.
Have more. Yeah. Truly amazing what technology is doing, and it's changing.
And then what we see, what will happen in the 21st century is all of that technology will start to blend and interweave with biology. And that's where we can scarcely imagine the consequences. And that's the thesis of my book, Virtually Human, that as we blend biology and information technology together, we will arrive at a point of techno-immortality.
Is there anything wrong with this? Is there a downside?
There definitely are downside risks. My greatest fear, personally, is that of bad players, evil people. I quote a lot of research in the book that shows about 1% of the population, through no fault of their own, are just born with an antisocial personality disorder. That's just the way their genome got scrambled. So that's a lot of people. That's 1 out of every 100 people. And a lot of them are very smart people, will know how to crack software and crack genomes as well as anybody. So there are going to be evil uses of this technology, and that's just the people within the U.S. How about, enemies of the U.S., rogue countries, rogue terror groups? So my whole motivation for writing this book, George, is to implore this country to create a safe harbor for this technology, to not impose moratoriums and mm-hmm. stuff like that. We've got to make sure that we are the best and the brightest at this digital immortality technology, because just like it takes a thief to catch a thief, it's going to take a techno-immortal to catch a techno-immortal.
What is the difference between mind files and mindware?
So mind files are all of the digital footprints of your life that are automatically collected right now by the so-called big data. Every time you sign on to any website, right away, cookies are tracking where you go.
Yeah.
If you use a smartphone, your smartphone ID is being monitored. Your location is being monitored. Every time you just mindlessly check yes, yes, yes in terms of can we access this, can we access this, all that stuff's collected. And there's a vast digital autobiography of each one of us being compiled every single day that we're connected to the grid. That's your mind file. Mindware is the software operating system that companies like Google, Facebook, and many others, including ones in China, in Europe, and elsewhere, are working at to find the consciousness that is embedded in that mind file and have it operate the mind file just like you would operate your own mind. So mindware is a consciousness operating system that uses your mind file as its data. The result of a mind of mindware operating on a mind file is what I call in my book a mind clone, a digital doppelganger of yourself.
Is there any end to what we can do?
Ultimately, I think the answer is no, because we've got such a bloody humongous universe at our footsteps. And there's certainly an end to what we could do right on the planet Earth. But, you know, a lot of people, and Elon Musk is, I think, a great example of this, are already saying, hey, you know, there's like a non-zero probability that we could wipe out all life on Earth. I mean, you take something like Ebola, as horrible as it is, every time it's transmitted person to person, that virus is mutating. And if you combine something like Ebola with the, you know, widespread infectivity of influenza, you begin to look at things that can, you know, really alter, if not vanquish, life as we know it. It's happened before. Virtually all life on Earth has been wiped out multiple times. So there will be a huge thrust to use this techno-immortality technology to move us off the planet into space, the moon, Mars, and further afield. Once we get further afield, there's no limit to where we can go.
No, there's not. And I think that's first step when we go to Mars with people who know it's going to be a one-way trip will be pretty darn dramatic, won't it?
It'll be tremendously dramatic. But the key thing, George, and the point I try to document in Virtually Human is that we have got to create a safe harbor for this technology to protect ourselves against the bad players with this technology. One of my favorite quotes, George, is from Albert Einstein, and he said there's only two things in the that are infinite, the universe and human stupidity, but he's not really sure about the universe.
Yeah. That's a good point. Let's take some calls with you. We'll go to Reading, Pennsylvania to start. Scott is with us. Scott, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hello, George. I'm a first-time caller, and I've been listening to you since 2003,
well,
I guess.
Thank you.
And, you know, it's just been amazing. There's a lot of things that you talk about that it's hard for me as an average guy to wrap my head around, you know, between Syria and Ebola and the whole thing. But Dr. Martin is talking about basically generating, you know, like skin cells and, you know, organs, which could do a lot of good. You know?
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, imagine if somebody was a burn victim and then you could regenerate skin cells and help that person, or, you know, they had a bad organ, but if it gets into the wrong hands, you know, that could, you know, really go the wrong direction. What do you think about that? I mean, they're cloning, you know, animals. What if it gets in the wrong hands? What do you think about that?
Yeah, could we have the island of Dr. Moreau, Martine?
Unfortunately, we can. The problem with humans is that anything that can be done will be done. And there will be bad players who create, you know, tortured forms of human life, tortured forms of human consciousness. We've got to be able to stamp those people out. But we can't stamp them out if we don't understand the technology that we're using. The U.S. is, you know, overwhelmingly a force for good in the world. And we need to develop this technology rapidly so that the good guys have the great preponderance of the technology, and we will be engaged in a timeless struggle between the force of the good and the force of evil. It's always been with us. I don't think it's going away, but what we've got to make sure is that we always have the technological edge.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Ebola. Why can't we come up with a cure for Ebola?
Well, I have no doubt that we will. Things are moving ridiculously quickly. There's already a dozen different treatments in various phases of preclinical and early clinical development. My company is also working on something that we licensed from Oxford University in that regard. The problem is when Ebola only affected a few dozen people in a few dozen remote villages in Central Africa and flared only once every 5 to 10 years, nobody really cared about it. Now, within a span of less than a year, it has presented itself as a potential global pandemic. So 1 year is a short time, and yet I think it's impressive that in that time we already have 12 different therapies that are in various stages of development. So we will be able to knock Ebola down, but the virus also will mutate. And the more we push into jungles and forests that have natural animal reservoirs for viruses that could kill people, the more of these type of situations we're going to run into. But George, I think the worst problem is the intentional type of Ebola, which I would call bioterror. And there is a do-it-yourself capability of biology that was first laid out by the great science fiction writer Frank Herbert in his book, The White Plague. This is the same Frank Herbert who wrote the Dune trilogy. He wrote another book, which is not as well appreciated, called The White Plague, where he laid out perfectly clearly in the late 1980s a bioterror scenario that could, you know, wipe out all life on Earth, all human life on Earth. This is the kind of thing that we need to guard against, and because we've got a great biotech industry in the U.S., I think we will be able to stay ahead of it. But if we don't keep nurturing and protecting and feeding this biotech industry, we will find ourselves at the wrong end of that stick.
We go now to Tom in Santa Barbara, California, west of the Rockies. Thomas, go ahead.
Well, great to speak to you, George. You're well above all. And, Martin, I was wondering, in the 1930s, California almost voted in a governmental program called technocracy, which had many benefits to the rapid advancement of technology. Are you familiar, and do you think we are approaching that under the Obama regime that's now operating?
Thanks for the question. I was not familiar with that technocracy. It sounds interesting.
With the, and let's go back to you, Tom. Do you want to explain it a little bit more for us?
Yes. Well, technocracy, California, one-third of the population voted for it, and two provinces in Canada voted for the program or the political party known as technocracy. What it is that under our statutes and the Constitution, we join with Mexico, Canada, and Central America and the rest of the world to form regional areas like that. And we advance to utilize automation to do the work, more or less. The dollar would be provided by energy. Everyone would be allocated so much energy, and technology would be determined by a group, not just a single president, but a commission, much like China has now, to develop technology to make life on Earth simplistic, yet completely ruled by technology and intelligence.
All right, very good. Well said, too, by the way. What's amazing about all of this, Martin, is that it just keeps rolling along, getting better, more efficient. I wonder what we'd be like 500 years from now. What do you think?
I think 500 years from now, we are going to have most of the humans living off of the planet and most of the humans living as digital consciousness with our digital consciousness backed up in multiple places. So it will be very, very difficult to kill a person. You can kill anyone instantiation of that person, and they will have themselves backed up on another server, able to be downloaded into another regenerated body.
Ready to go.
Death will be looked at as like seriously old school. I was like, whoa, people used to die? How stupid.
Do you remember the great baseball player Ted Williams?
Of course. He's at Alcor.
That's right. His head is there. And one day, I think they want to download his memory from his brain, his frozen brain, and then clone him, and there's Ted again.
Ted's coming back.
He is. I wonder if he'll play for the Boston Red Sox again. Let's go to Alex in Boise, Idaho. Alex, take it away. You're up with us.
Hi, yeah, my call was about the regenerative properties of the liver. I've heard the liver could regenerate pretty much the entirety of itself. It was mostly damaged. If there's like, you know, at least a quarter of it left, it could regenerate itself. But if that could be used in continuing and furthering life.
Yeah, it's a great question, and you're totally right. You know, a lot of the people today who have end-stage liver disease, they receive a transplant from a close relative or a friend who can donate half of their healthy liver to the individual whose bad liver is taken out. And remarkably, within as little as 1 to 2 months, both the person with the disease and the person who donated half their liver to them regrow their liver to normal size. And it's truly a remarkable property of the liver. Now, we are living in one of the most amazing times ever. You know, let me share with you that before 2001, there was what's called a dogma of biology. It said that stem cells would differentiate themselves into particular types of cells, such as skin or muscle or nerve cells, but you could never go back the other way. This was the dogma of biology. It was like a law. You could never go from a skin cell back to a stem cell. Now, around the turn of the century, that gets proven to be untrue, and we now have abilities to, first it was shown that you could genetically reprogram a skin cell to become a stem cell. Now it's shown you could do it just with a few of pharmaceutical-like chemicals. In a little test tube, you can convert a differentiated cell back to a stem cell. This means that the entire human body has regenerative medicine capability. And regenerative medicine will be to the 21st century what vaccines were to the 20th century.
Will there be any end to making new body parts, whether it's a heart, a new kidney? Will they be able to do all that?
Yes. We will positively be able to do all of that, and people are working on all of that right now.
Yeah, that is amazing. Martin, thank you. Enjoy Tahiti, and be safe when you come back to the States.
My pleasure. Real honor to be on your show, George.
Martin Rothrath, the website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Make sure you're part of our Friday night program, Little Scary Things, and then some open lines on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.